Are you all the way in? Get ready for you. It's All the Way in Radio with your host, Deborah E. Lake. Recognize, claim, and live fully in your life through All the Way in Radio. Have complete confidence that you will succeed. Be fully invested in your life and in your happiness. All the way in radio.
I like that.
Change begins now.
This is All the Way in Radio, where you learn how to let the words of negative people roll away like water from a duck's back. I'm Deborah E. Lake. And, you know, this show is a milestone for All the Way In because we passed the 30th mark with this show. This is our 31st show, and we're continuing our conversation about abortion, the personal side of abortion. Now, we're not going to talk about whether abortion is right or wrong. Enough people are having that ongoing fight. In fact, people are so busy fighting with one another over who's right and who's wrong that the voices of the people who are most affected, women, are seldom heard. And I intend to address this void with my shows. And with me is my guest for tonight from Massachusetts, Susan Tordella. And Susan is a blogger and author of an upcoming book titled Raising Abel, How Chores Cultivate Capable, Confident Young People. And I'm going to try to bring her on. She's going to tell you a little bit about her book later on the show. But right now, she's going to talk about her experiences with abortion. Let's see if we can get Susan on. Susan.
Hello, Deborah.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm very happy to have you here.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with you telling our listeners about your experience.
Well, Deborah, it was a long time ago, and in 1980, I was only 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known the father of my child who, for only 5 months when I unexpectedly became pregnant. And I was in a real quandary, and I didn't know what to do.
Mm.
It was probably the hardest decision I've ever made in my life.
Yeah.
So we kind of went back and forth. And I'm the kind of person, I don't keep secrets very well. So it was natural for me to talk to people I knew and loved and trusted about my situation. And that was pretty interesting to find out the different responses for how to deal with the situation. And probably the best response I got was from my older sister, who had faced the same situation about 13 years earlier when abortion was illegal.
Mm.
But she summed it up really well. She said I was in a no-win situation.
Yeah.
So, and I know people who've had abortions and they've suffered huge emotional trauma from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I chose not to have an abortion. And that was still difficult. There was just no easy way out. There was going to be, you know, I don't even know if there were winners and losers. They were just participants. And as a result, I can understand every reason why a woman wants to have an abortion and every reason why a woman might not want to have an abortion. And I fully respect the legal right to have an abortion. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would have been like if I didn't have that option. And I can see how women would be desperate and feel desperate to seek illegal abortions, you know, self-abortions, et cetera. And, and that people still do that, obviously. But I understand the desperation and the lack of choice that a woman might feel in that situation, because it's really tough.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that I have heard, we've done, this is our third show here with this topic, and I've heard the same, not necessarily the same words, but the same message. There's no easy, for one, there's no easy choice, and two, it's pretty much like you put it, a no-win situation. You just have to do the best you can in the situation and be glad that you have choices.
It's true. And I guess I was disappointed in, shall I say, the world?
Oh, say whatever you want, yes.
I was disappointed in other people in my world, and in and I think in our social attitudes, that abortion was so easily accepted. Because when I gave birth to that child, I mean, I was holding a miracle. I was holding life itself. And no one had really affirmed that in an outward sort of way. It's something, you know, I think if men had babies, it would be such a different, well, they wouldn't be men, I guess. But I think our ability to give life is so, I don't know, under-respected, dissed, presumed, taken for granted. I can't find the right word for it.
Well, you know, that's it's interesting that you bring that up, because I'm theologically trained. I went to Union Theological Seminary in New York. And one of the things that struck me was the blood sacrifices, right? And how men go through a lot of, in the Old Testament, there's a lot of, actually, I had nightmares behind reading Leviticus and things like that, where they you put blood on the left toe, and a special animal had to be. And it struck me that women, we do that anyway. That's that's part of being a woman. And
how do we do that?
We bleed.
And
blood is supposed to be a purifier. And that it was interesting to me to see how it had been twisted around to be unclean when it came to women. You know, so I'd like to hear you say more about our capability to give birth, how that's undervalued by women and by the rest of the world.
Yeah, women and men, all of us. I read about women who have wanted or show up at abortion clinics, and they say, oftentimes they give the reason for the abortion is, my boyfriend said X, Y, Z. You know, my boyfriend said, this isn't a good time, or I should get rid of it, or I can't do it now. And so it sounds like it's a mutual decision. However, again, the woman is just negating what she is carrying. It's just viewed as excess, inconvenient. The bottom line is, it's a beating heart. It's a life that has to be stopped to when you have an abortion. And, again, I understand why you want one. And women need them. And I know a lot of people who've had them. And it's just difficult. But how do we just take it for granted?
Well,
maybe it happens so easily for many of us. And because there are so many children in the world. And that's a tough question to answer. Because
well,
we don't respect ourselves as women.
That's true. Yes. It could be that. And it could be part of being socialized and being brought up as a female. You're taught to not value
And we're
what you bring to the creation.
True. And we are a creation. and were viewed as sex objects first, vehicles of sexual pleasure first, and then, oh, by the way, you know, is it the right time to have a baby? There's never a good time to have a baby. I don't know. Do you have any children, Deborah?
Oh, yes, I have 4 daughters.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, yeah. They're all grown, and a couple of them have their own children as well.
Yeah. I think once you have a baby, I think it makes it even harder to have an abortion. Or easier, depending on how many you have. I don't know. My mother had 9 children, and she said there's 2 problems with pregnancy. Either you are or you aren't. Yeah. And my older sister, who also faced the same situation, and me too, I've known women who have been infertile. And she said she would choose our situation any day of the week over infertility. You know, and I think both cases, it's where we're slightly out of control. You know, or it's not the right timing, or whatever. There are a lot of reasons.
Well, one of the things that I know about is having choice. And knowing what your options are, and having people that you trust and who have your best interest at heart, not theirs, that is what gives you power. That's where your power is. You have choices. You have places where you can go where you can think through the choices that you have without having, you know, pressure to go in a particular direction.
Now, when you talk about choice, and I hear about these young women who, they're really girls who are less than 16 or 18, and they're able to get an abortion without telling their parents. And that kind of blows me away because it's such a big decision. And they're being asked to make this decision independently, whereas just about everything else in their life is made with their parents. So, again, I think it's that loss of power. Or giving them too much. Because, again, it's just such a difficult position to be in.
I think one of the things that came out in one of our other shows was that, and this has been said before, that unwanted pregnancies is where we should start really spending the bulk of our focus, eliminating them as much as possible. And part of that is what you're touching on with young girls. And I call them girls. They're teenagers.
They are.
Being sexually active long before they are ready to even think about the responsibilities that come with being sexually active. And
they're in relationships where they may be being used by the men in there or the boys. So anyway, keep going.
Well, actually, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about where you got your support, if at all, and how that made a difference. So we'll be right back, okay?
Isn't that John and Rachel over there?
I thought they broke up.
Broke up? When?
A while back. John looks good.
Why wouldn't he? Who told you they broke up?
Rachel did.
Well, maybe she was just talking, venting.
No, Rachel found out John had HIV, and she was going to leave him.
What? HIV?
Yeah, she was worried that she had it too, but her test came back negative. I wonder what made her change her mind. Maybe...
What?
Well, when my brother told me he had HIV, he gave me a book. Said it would help us talk. You remember. The title was Your Neighbor Has AIDS.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
And when Rachel told me about John, I asked her not to make any decisions until she'd read it.
That was smart. That book helped you and your brother.
Yeah, and what I learned helped me talk with Mom, too.
You think that made a difference for them?
I'd bet money on it, and you know I'm not a betting woman.
But you are a great sis and good friend.
Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake is available at DeborahELake.com, Amazon.com, and select bookstores.
Okay, we are back, and I am here tonight, and we're talking about abortion on the personal side. And I'm here with Susan Tordella, who's joining me from Massachusetts. Susan, tell us what you can about where you got your support back when you were making your decision and what kind of difference that made.
Okay. I was lucky to have a supportive family, mostly in my mother and my older sister. And they accepted where I was at, they didn't tell me what to do, and they talked to me about my options and didn't judge me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who got pregnant at 17. She lived in the South and kind of a lower-class family in the bayou, and her family told her, "You got yourself pregnant, honey. Now you's going to have to deal with it yourself."
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of left her out to hang alone at 17 with no support. She probably could have gotten an abortion. I don't know where. I mean, most people can find the money somehow, or I guess, I don't even know what the law is now with Medicaid or Medicare abortions.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt for her to be so alone in the world. My friends at the time, they were so young. What did they know, Deborah? What did I know? And I can clearly remember a few people who really were quite clear that I should have an abortion and it would be okay. Like one person said to me that I should feel no moral misgivings about having an abortion. I should really feel no guilt, and I should just, it'd be perfectly fine to go ahead and do it. In a way, maybe that was him giving me permission that I could give to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, another man just assumed I would do it. He just said, you know, go ahead and do it. And I really was quite close to getting an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I really was. And one of the only things that stopped me was a couple years earlier, I had said to a friend who was only 19 at the time, I'd written her a long letter about why she shouldn't, because I was kind of feeling I was in a very intensely Christian atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And she got the letter the day after she had the abortion.
Mm.
And I felt really guilty about that. And I also felt like a hypocrite. I felt like I could tell her to keep the baby or give it up for adoption. But for myself, abortion was a really easy way to get rid of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my mother said, you really can't, there's no easy way to get rid of a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it lingers on mm-hmm. and on.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess looking back, I would have to say that. And the man in my life at the time, who actually is still in my life now, he was torn.
Mm-hmm.
He was really torn.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually said to me at one point, we've been married 30 years now, he said to me at one point, Sue, you're acting like you and the baby are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are. So, yeah, it was a really tough time, Deborah, and I felt lucky to have the support of those two people in my life.
No, it's great. And one of the things I want to pull out of what you said a lot of great things, but one important thing that I want to pull out is the fact that you said that the man in your life was torn, and and I've heard that over and over and over. There's no easy answer,
mm-hmm.
and no matter what you decide, you always have questions.
Hmm. What if?
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless, if you choose to bring the baby to term, you have questions about what your life would have been like if you had kept going down the road that you were going. And the reverse of that is if you had it's what if on both sides.
I'm glad to hear you say that because it is such a monumental decision.
Mm-hmm.
And my choices were have the baby and keep it as a single person, put the baby up for adoption, or get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And really, only one of the three probably included my now husband.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I had to do it again, I would have had the baby and then sorted out our relationship later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as it was, we got married when I was 5 months pregnant, and we just started off on a roll. We actually had four children all together.
Mm-hmm.
So I was blessed with fertility. And like I said before, I think that's better than being cursed with infertility.
Yeah. What was it like to talk this through with the father of the baby?
Oh, there were a lot of tears.
Mm.
It was really, really hard.
Mm.
And I hate to speak for him, because again, he was reflecting what he had been brought up to believe and what he had been taught. And he was reflecting back society at large,
mm-hmm.
that it's okay to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was close to it. It seemed like a reasonable alternative. And again, once that child was born, my mother, again to quote her, she's gone now. She said there are many unwanted pregnancies, but never an unwanted baby.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain time in her life, she worked in adoption counseling because she was a social worker. So mm-hmm. again, she's seen both sides of it. But also, I think getting back to the man in my life, I think that until a marriage or a relationship is tested by a crisis, I don't think it's really solidified. So we start off with this big crisis that we worked through.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what you said about the what ifs, it's always there. It's always going to be there. That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
thank you for saying that, because I never really, realized it's such a universal result of going through this experience.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Respond to that, because I had something else. I'll say what I had.
Oh, I was just going to say that a lot of times women feel like they have to go through this alone, and that's why one of the reasons I wanted to bring out what was it like to talk with the father of the baby and include him in the decision process. Did you feel pressured to have the baby or not have?
Yeah.
Or was it just something that you shared as a couple together and went through the maze on together?
He had an opinion and I had an opinion. It didn't seem like there was going to be a resolution. Yeah. I do want to address, though, what you're saying about women going through it alone.
Mm-hmm.
If abortion is so acceptable, why is there so much secrecy and shame surrounding it? I felt a lot of shame in 1981 about being unmarried and pregnant. And so that's almost 30 years ago. I don't know if that's true today. There's
mm-hmm.
the same sense of shame that I need a man to be attached to make this pregnancy okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the secrecy around abortion, I don't understand it. If it's so acceptable, it's legal, and we're all so accepting of it, there's a disconnect there.
What are your thoughts about that? What do you think?
Does it relate back to our power as women to give life?
Hmm.
And it's a way to control us?
Hmm. Can you say more about that?
Shame is very powerful.
Mm.
Shame is a very powerful force.
Mm.
I guess if it's going to be so okay, why don't we talk about it more? And just you bringing this to light, I think, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always there, and we have to fight for this, for the right to keep abortion legal.
Mm-hmm. And also hear more about the difficulty of it, and maybe give some young women some insight that they don't necessarily have otherwise. Because I believe if we don't talk, even if what we've gone through is very difficult and hard to talk about, once we get to the place where we can talk, it's important mm-hmm. for us to be able to have a place where we can share so others can learn from us.
Hmm. I think that's important. I guess you've seen the movie Juno.
Mm-hmm.
She was quite determined to give that child a life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there aren't that many babies for adoption these days because abortion is so easy and so acceptable in its shameful secret way. Have any of your other guests talked about the shame or the secrecy?
Actually, yes, in a roundabout way. And it was more personal, how they dealt with the guilt and things like that.
Mm.
But you're right. In some circles, there are, if you're looking for a certain type of baby, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
you might run into a loss. But there are definitely a lot of children out there for adoption. It's part of what's going on with that is a lot of people want a certain type of baby.
It's true.
Yeah. So That's another show.
True, and I think newborns are always in demand, matter what their race and situation.
That's it.
Frequently, newborns are in demand. So
one of the things we talked about is what worked. With the people who were helping you make the decision, they didn't judge you and they were there for you. Is there anything that you can talk about that didn't work? And this is for people who are trying to help someone think through the decision. What
I think the most powerful thing that helped was to ask me questions and ask what I wanted to do and what I was feeling and what the pros and cons were. What didn't work was someone telling me what to do. That really made me angry. It made me want to push them away. And someone who tried to push their system of thinking, their system of beliefs on me, you know, in a black and white way, in the same way I had pushed mine on my friend a few years earlier. So, yeah, I think that the communication and listening was probably the most beneficial.
Okay. That's important to get out, to let people know that what we call active listening or the ministry of presence, where you're there, but you're not judging, and you're not just sitting there passively either. You're there as a witness, and you're there as someone who can hold some of the emotion that's going on, and maybe act as a mirror so that they can look and see, okay, this is where I am, and this is where I might want to go, maybe not, you know, that kind of thing.
I think that was really beautifully stated. And I think the one word I would add is compassion. Because you are with passion, you are with the feeling for that person, with what that person might be feeling. And I did feel very alone, and I felt very ashamed, and so uncertain. And I made such a big decision, and I look at this fetus, this embryo who became this beautiful baby and who is a beautiful young woman right now. You know, the other what if that I add to my list is, what if I did put her up for adoption? Like when she turned about 20 or in her 20s, I thought, what if she showed up on my door today? And this is the first day I ever met her. You know, what if that happened? What would that have felt like? Because she looks so much like me. You know, and I wonder how much she would have acted like me if she didn't grow up around me.
Yeah, genetics are pretty strong. They really are. There have been studies where twins have been raised in different parts of the country or even different countries, and they have a lot of similarities.
Oh, those are interesting, where they buy the same car and marry the same woman named Rose. Yeah.
So here's a question that I have, and then we're going to go into talking about a little about your book. What can you say about how the experience, the whole thing, going through it and coming out on the other side, whatever it is, how did that change you? How did it help shape you, who you are, or affect you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It made me grow up because I had to think about someone besides myself. It made me appreciate the life-giving force of my body. It's a power. It's a power we don't talk about. Or appreciate very loudly. I mean, in some ways, motherhood and pregnancy is revered, you know, almost religiously so. But in general, it's something that I think is pushed aside and not given very much credo or credit to. We just kind of take it for granted in our body, or most time we spend avoiding it. And then what that child brought to my life, obviously, was life-changing. I mean, my life would have gone on a completely different course had I not decided to have the baby, get married, and, you know, start a family at that time. I mean, so the whole course of my life was completely changed. And I entered into that decision freely in a way. Some part of me must have wanted it. I might not have known it at the time. However, I must have wanted it because that's what I chose. And it was hard for a couple of years. I think sometimes I resented that I had chosen it. I regretted it. And it's very destructive to make a decision like that and look back and regret it. But I was young. What did I know? You know, I did the best I could. Mm-hmm. And I think in the long term, I'm happy I decided that.
And that's what matters. Where the scales tip, because either way, like I've said, either way, you have regrets and you have questions. Which way do the scales tip?
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your book.
Okay. So you know, in having these four children, I also became a parenting instructor and I ran workshops. And of course, I taught what I most needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how to raise children in a democratic atmosphere and encourage them towards independence.
Mm.
And one of the best ways I found to do that, to teach them how to be self-disciplined and responsible in the world, was to have them do chores.
Mm.
They weren't difficult chores, but they were regular,
mm-hmm.
and they owned them, and we depended on them to do those chores.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of just emptying the trash or doing the recycling every day or doing the dishes every night, they became good workers,
mm-hmm.
good students, good friends. They are in good relationships. They learn how to make good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So the book I've written is about how to encourage. Chores are one aspect of a democratic family, and also how to set good boundaries, how to use encouragement, how important family dinner is. I mean, I look at the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
Of having a family where parents and children both have rights, and we use family meetings. That's a big part of the book, because at family meetings is where you talk about who's going to do what chore. And family meetings give kids a voice and a choice, mm-hmm. because you say, well, what chore do you want, Deborah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make you do one. I'm not going to make you take out the trash. You're going to pick between taking out the trash or the recycling. Then you're in control. I've empowered you.
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes I resent it. It's not hard. It takes time. However, the benefits of doing the chores are really deep and varied.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just doing a chore. It's getting in touch with the zen of work, of contributing to a family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And later on to society. It's interesting, when you were talking, it's the same thing. We used to have family meetings.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we did. And we ate at least one, well, usually two, but at least one dinner together,
yeah.
as a family.
A week?
No, every day.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and they had chores that they did.
Your four girls?
Yes.
Okay, now tell me about your family meetings, because not that many families had family meetings.
Well, we would have family meetings, one, to talk about, like you said, divvy up the chores and
okay.
see how that was going.
Yeah.
And sometimes we would have family meetings, you know, with kids. You have conflict, of course.
Yes.
And sometimes we would have family meetings to talk about some of the conflict that was going on in a calmer setting, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So we would
now
have family meetings to talk about vacations.
Yeah.
The business of running a family. And I brought the children into that business of running a family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where'd you get the idea for it?
Survival.
There are family meetings in the Bible?
No, survival.
Survival. Oh.
Keeping my sanity. I'm like, okay, what can I do with this? Oh, let's have a meeting. We need to have a meeting right now.
That's right. Now, how close in age are your daughters?
They're pretty close. They're like 3 and 4 years apart, somewhere in that area.
So you had four children in 12 years?
Well, about that, yeah. I spent a whole decade having children. And
so four
children. The rest of my life raising them, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's hard work.
Yes.
A lot of times I think parents are so overwhelmed, especially now with the economics the way they are, and even with two salaries coming in, a lot of times you can't make it. So people
yes.
are working more and spending more time away from home, and
yes.
it's difficult. It's very difficult to have that kind of management. For
yeah.
lack of a better word, it takes a lot of time. It takes energy. And I think that's why a lot of times parents tend to leave their children to their own device with
yeah.
the little gadgets that they have they can play with or whatever.
One of the things I talk about in my book is that kids have become performers instead of producers.
Yeah.
And parents have accepted this, and they feel that they don't want to burden the child with chores. And like one time at a campground, I saw a mother washing the dishes, and I said, "Where are the kids?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Oh, I felt bad for them. It was their vacation." Well, when is your vacation, Mom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's actually fun to wash dishes outside. You know, everything's more fun at a campground.
And it's more fun when you're a kid, too.
It is. And it's
my kids used to say, "Can I wash the dishes?" You know, really?
You know, wow. That's pretty good. How'd you get them to do that?
You know, kids, you know, they want to do stuff that they think they can't do, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, you take advantage of that little bit of energy and say, "Sure you can."
So how did you think that doing chores influenced your kids? How did you see that?
Oh, well, of course, they are kids when they have responsibility in managing and running a home, that's in line with their age. You can put too much on children, but that's in line with their age. They, of course, feel like they're a part of something that's bigger than themselves. And we all want to belong to something that's bigger than who we are and contribute to that, to the good of it, not just belong to it, but to feel like we contribute something, like we're valued. I think that's where a lot of the draw for gangs come.
Yeah.
They want to belong to something bigger than they are, and they want to feel valued. And these gangs fill that need.
Yeah.
And you can also do it with your family and get some chores done in the process.
Get something out of them. Now, you use this word belong, and my book is based on the work of Alfred Adler and Rudolf Dreikers.
Mm-hmm.
Two old white guys from Austria who were like among the first psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
And Adler's whole philosophy is based on the need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
That we are so strongly motivated. And, I mean, he was one of Freud's inner cronies with Jung, Carl Jung.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Jung broke off and Adler broke off because Freud believed that we're motivated by our sexual needs.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah.
repressed sexuality.
Yeah, he got stuck on that one. And Adler believed we were motivated by this social need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole philosophy is based on that need. And like you said, by contributing, we have value and we belong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like that. I'm working on the last final rewrite. I might have to include that.
Well, you have my permission.
All right. Now, your grandkids have chores.
Well, you know, I am sure they do. I am sure they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They're young still, but they have small chores like taking care of their room, stuff like that, putting their books away. They're young. They're under 10.
Oh my gosh, they better have chores. You better have a talk. You better buy my book. My opinion is by the time a child is 4, they need to be doing something simple like emptying the wastebaskets.
Taking
out the trash, feeding them.
Yeah, that's where they get that. Yeah.
Oh, by 10, my goodness, I have a whole list they could be very busy with.
Well, we're getting a little low on time, so what I'd like to do is, as we wind down some, is to have you give some final advice to people who are helping someone with the decision of whether or not to have an abortion, or if you'd like to talk to the person who is actually making that decision, it's your choice.
Yeah. Oh, you mean, to the woman in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would rather speak to her.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that you are carrying a life, and it is a very difficult decision no matter which way you go. And if you decide to end that life, find support and get help in therapy so that you can let go of the guilt or the regret that you might feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a really big decision that impacts more than you. And you are the most important thing in the equation. Mm-hmm. And no, there is never a good time to have a baby. There just isn't. There never will be. And if you and find the people in your life who will be of support to you, who are compassionate listeners and will not judge you.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be your family. You might have to go outside of your family to find that.
Yeah, yeah. I like what you said about talking to someone, if necessary in therapy, regardless of what you decide. That's not bad advice, because
either way, whatever.
It's always good to be able to talk through your feelings with an impartial person. That's important.
And that's your minister, maybe that's a therapist, a teacher, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here, and it was a pleasure talking with you. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Deborah. Same here. You really, I'm going to have to tune into some more of your shows.
Well, please do. Please do. Let me know. Feedback. I love it.
Okay.
All right. And much success with your book and
any
of your ventures.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's all I have for today. Thanks for listening. My next show will be Friday, March 19th. My guest will be author and talk show host, Roland Hines. And if you like, you'll be able to call up and have a chat with him. We'll be taking calls during part of the show. Also, keep checking my website, DeborahELake.com, and you might see a surprise. And my birthday is in a few days. And you might find a broadcast from Baltimore, all the way in Baltimore, all right? So stay connected and definitely tune in on March 19th at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. This is All the Way in Radio, and we record live and uncensored. I'm Deborah E. Lake, here to let you know that you can recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Until next time, world.
This has been All the Way in Radio. Remember, be all the way in your life. Until next time, get connected at allthewayin.org. While you're there, check out our resource section. It will help you recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Become part of All the Way In and have full access to special discounts and programs. Visit allthewayin.org for details. Take All the Way in Radio wherever you go through iTunes. Questions or comments? Ideas for future shows? Email them to info@allthewayin.org. All the Way in Radio is a production of Lake Enterprise. Audio production by Marcy Height. Creative consultation, Design House. Music by Andre Morganoff and Gautam.